The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the province's gynecologists were promised that 90% of their malpractice insurance would be covered as per the terms of their contract for the first 3 months of this year while the government was negotiating a longer-term solution to their issues. Mr. Speaker, this week, it appears the government has gone back on its word and shortchanged them on its reimbursements. I'd like to ask the Premier, why is his government negotiating in bad faith with the province's gynecologists?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Minister of Health will respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for that question. We do have a circumstance at the moment whereby the Canadian Medical Protective Association, CMPA, have dramatically raised the fees. All provinces are looking at this issue. What I can assure the obstetrician gynecologist is that we are, in fact, have this on the table during negotiations. We're at 80%. And that's where we are at the moment, and we know it will be a hot item during the master agreement.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that may be true about the CMPA fees, but the contract is with the government of Nova Scotia, and it is the government that is responsible for honouring it, Mr. Speaker. And from the Deputy Minister of Health himself, our gynecologists were insured that their fees would continue to be covered up to 90% for the first 3 months of this year, and now those payments have gone out and they have been shortchanged, Mr. Speaker. That is a government responsibility. So I'd like to ask the Premier, will he ensure that the province's gynecologists are treated fairly and given what they were promised in their contract with the government?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I ask the Minister of Health.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know that there was a contractual obligation there. The fees rose dramatically because we moved into the master agreement. That's where it will be reach its final resolve. And what I can tell the Leader of the Opposition is that the obstetrician gynecologists in this province will be treated fairly through the master agreement.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, do you know what treated fairly should mean? It should mean if you have a contractual obligation, as the Minister of Health has just said, then you should honour it, Mr. Speaker. The government has broken its promise to the gynecologist. They broke their promise to the film industry. They broke their promise to the mining industry. The record of broken promises is stacking up, Mr. Speaker. Will the Premier at least apologize to the gynecologists of Nova Scotia for this latest broken promise to them?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member for that question. This is part of the physician community that do, in fact, pay the second highest fees in terms of malpractice insurance. It's giving us an opportunity to review that whole reimbursement area for obstetricians. And what I can tell the member is that when the master agreement is finalized, I think our obstetrician gynecologists, in fact, will be where they have been for quite some time.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're finally learning which business grants the government has decided to slash. One of the biggest, Mr. Speaker, is the Capital Incentive Investment Program, a cut of $8.5 million. This program helped our manufacturing sector upgrade equipment and improve productivity, particularly for small businesses, manufacturers in rural Nova Scotia. But much like the creative and film industries, it was a complete surprise this program disappeared. Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier, can he please tell these businesses why they cut this successful program without a transition plan in place or without any consultation or notice?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to thank all those manufacturers in this province who have seen fit to invest in their businesses in this province. We've been able to work with them cooperatively. We know that there's been the capital investment program that is through NSBI now, which, Mr. Speaker, is a rebate program. It's not a grant program that the previous government had put in place. We've seen an announcement recently that the red tape reduction between our province and the province of New Brunswick, Mr. Speaker, to move our region into the most progressive regulatory environment in the country, Mr. Speaker. Businesses are very positive to that and very encouraged by the work that's being done in labor and advanced education, working towards finding university grads and community college grads their first job in this province through Graduate Opportunities Program. Mr. Speaker, there are a number of initiatives that business are moving forward with this government to ensure that young Nova Scotians get an opportunity to work here.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the lack of consultation and planning is becoming a trademark of the McNeill government. This government also cut nearly $1.5 million from the Productivity and Innovation Program, a nationally renowned program that has been improving our workforce's skills since its inception. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Premier, how does cutting funds from programs that train our workforce help our province stay competitive on the global stage?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to remind her of the tremendous investment that's made through other programs and workers across this province in partnership with the private sector. We've seen a tremendous opportunity in broadening the opportunities for apprentices to get their first job in this province. Mr. Speaker, that's a good news story. As I mentioned earlier, the Graduate Opportunities Program, which actually, Mr. Speaker, encourages employers to hire people in this province, enhance those skills. We believe in professional development. We believe all organizations should be investing in their employees. As a government, we invest in our employees, Mr. Speaker. It's an ongoing process. But, Mr. Speaker, as we evolve and meet the challenges of today, programs need to evolve to meet those challenges. And we're very encouraged, by the way, the public and private sector has joined government to ensure that we have the right tools in place for our workers today.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, again, it's our rural economy that this Premier's budget hurts the most, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Ivney told us that improving productivity and competitiveness is the foundational base in rural industries. It's essential if we are to build a stronger trade economy for the province as a whole. So I want to ask the Premier if he can tell us exactly what the impact on international trade for Nova Scotia will be due to the slashing of $17 million from programs that made this province more competitive globally.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to tell the Honourable Member what makes this province competitive is its workers, Mr. Speaker, and the entrepreneurs, Mr. Speaker. We've increased small business loans through the credit union, Mr. Speaker. We've doubled it, Mr. Speaker. We've increased the cap so that we loan guarantee on those small businesses. Those are great signs, Mr. Speaker. We're seeing markets open up, Mr. Speaker. We're seeing our lobster continue to be distributed out.
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, we're seeing entrepreneurs across this province embrace the new opportunities, Mr. Speaker, not only trading, Mr. Speaker, in the eastern U.S., trading in Europe. We've just had the largest single investment of any province in Canada from Asia, Mr. Speaker, a $50 million equity fund that goes into small businesses. Mr. Speaker, the big difference between this side of the House and that side of the House, we don't think we need to throw money at people to get them to invest in this province because they know the quality of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, today is Doctors' Day, a time when we show our thanks and our respect to the doctors of the province. Recently, Dr. Robin McQuarrie had meetings with senior officials of the Department of Health, including a very interesting one with the Minister's own executive assistant. He said he wanted to see her and showed her a file he keeps as he vets people that want to meet with the minister. In that file were a pile of newspaper clippings, Facebook posts, photographs of Dr. McQuarrie, and advertisements in which she has appeared, a clear intimidation tactic. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the minister, did he instruct his executive assistant to keep a file on Dr. Robin McQuarrie and other Nova Scotians, or only those that disagree with his policy?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. An emphatic no.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this minister has nothing on Richard Nixon because the fact of the matter is his staff are keeping files on people that disagree with the government, Mr. Speaker. And on Doctors' Day, a day where we're expected and should be showing our respect for the doctors of the province, the minister's... When challenged on this, Mr. Speaker, by Dr. McQuarrie, the minister's executive assistant, actually sent her a message saying, I'm no longer able to tell if you're being dishonest with me or the other obstetricians of Nova Scotia are being dishonest with you. There is no respect in that, Mr. Speaker. The minister says he doesn't know this is what his office does, keeping files on people, showing disrespect in their communication to them. Will he apologize to Dr. McQuarrie and ensure all Nova Scotians that his office will not keep files on people who disagree with his policies?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the comment. And what I can assure the Leader of the Opposition is that I am more than prepared to meet with Dr. Robin McQuarrie and any physician in this province at any time, as I have met a couple of hundred so far in my first 18 months in office. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Business. Mr. Speaker, included in the list of program cuts by the new Department of Business is the Community Access Program, also known as CAP. I just want to take a moment and read a comment from the Minister of Labour from May 14, 2012, about the impact of cutting this program. She said, and I quote, "The decision to stop funding this program will mean many low-income families will continue to be at an educational and economic disadvantage." So my question for the Minister of Business, why is ensuring that low-income families aren't at an educational or economic disadvantage no longer a priority for the McNeill government?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. It's quite obvious, Mr. Speaker, that this government certainly recognizes the needs and challenges of our vulnerable population. My colleague in Community Service has done an excellent job in reaching out to and communicating with and meeting with and providing support to those people in the community that that are challenged.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
So I guess by cutting income or not increasing income assistance for 2 years and freezing it is reaching out. Mr. Speaker, I want to read you another quote from the Minister of Labour. When the federal government cut funding for the CAP program in 2012, she said, and I quote, "If cutting the program was a positive decision, they would have been out front with pictures and cameras and announcements, but instead they did it, trying to fly underneath the radar." So my question for the Minister of Business, why did he try to fly under the radar by keeping the McNeill government's decision to cut the CAP program a secret for a period of 3 weeks?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Quite honestly, the analysis done of the cuts that the my colleague has referenced and the cross-departmental responsibilities in our review of duplicate and triplicate funding formulas has taken time, Mr. Speaker, and just this week we were able to pull that information together and we've shared that information publicly. Mr. Speaker, it is about being transparent, but it's also about being accurate and factual.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Given the damage this long winter and high snow loads have caused the greenhouse and the dairy industries, with the greenhouse and barn collapses, more than $10 million in damage, I understand, and given the impact on the apple industry, in the fact that they have not been able to get pruning done in a timely fashion and delays in planting season and impacts on maple sugar production from the high snow loads. My question for the Minister is, Mr. Speaker, can the Minister tell this House what he is doing to address these many impacts this the high snowfall and long winter have had on our agricultural industries?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, it's been a serious winter for the farming industry in the province of Nova Scotia with several greenhouses collapsing and the toll and the cost of that keeps mounting. We've been dealing with directly with the Greenhouse Growers Association through Perennia. We've had some workshops already with them and we'll continue to work with them. We were looking forward to federal programs that may be able to help them. We are identifying those and working with them as well.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it is indeed these federal programs that I wish to ask about. Can the Minister tell us which sectors he has applied for federal disaster relief for the which sectors of the Nova Scotia industry of agriculture that he's addressing with the federal government?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you very much. This is a very important question to the industry in Nova Scotia. We are looking at a whole fleet of different programs. There's three or four that may fit. Some of them don't fit particular greenhouse operations and other businesses because they never enrolled in them to start with. So there's some issues there, some disconnects with the industry. We're working as diligently as we possibly can. And we were talking to the industry on an ongoing basis, and we'll continue to do that to mitigate the damage as best we can.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. The government has said it plans to announce legislation in the fall affecting the province's electricity system. And Nova Scotians want to know if they will pay more or less for electricity next year. So my question for the Premier is, can the Premier tell Nova Scotians that electricity rates will not increase under his plan in 2016?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, Mr. Speaker. I want to, first of all, thank the Member from Dartmouth East for the tremendous work he did providing competition in the energy market. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank him for the leadership he showed in removing the efficiency tax off power bills across this province. Mr. Speaker, we're certainly disappointed to see that the opposition party supported the URB's decision to scoop all that money up, Mr. Speaker, instead of passing it on to hardworking Nova Scotians. I want to congratulate the Minister of Energy today, Mr. Speaker, for the work he's doing in ensuring that we
not only do we have a robust transmission system in this province, Mr. Speaker, but that we have one indeed between our sister province next door to ensure that we can capitalize on all the renewable energy that takes place in provinces across this region. And we're, Mr. Speaker, we're extremely excited to see the investment that's taking place, Mr. Speaker, in all sources of energy.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't hear in there whether the Premier expected rates to go down or not, so I'll try again, because we've heard the Premier suggest before that rates would go down, and Nova Scotians will remember very fully the Premier's plan on restructuring Efficiency Nova Scotia and how that would reduce rates. Instead, power rates remain the same this year as they did last year, despite comments from the Premier saying he would lower rates. So I'll ask the Premier again. I'll ask it a little differently this time. When can Nova Scotians expect a break on electricity rates?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, dear diary. Power rates, Mr. Speaker, power rates did not go up by the admission of the member across the aisle, Mr. Speaker. And let me also tell you, Mr. Speaker, this government has continued to assure, Mr. Speaker, that we bring fairness to the electricity rates in this province. We bring, this government's continued to ensure that we bring competition to the marketplace, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to ensure that ratepayers are looked after in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, in Cape Breton last evening, three emergency rooms. Sorry, Mr. Speaker. It's a little loud in here. Mr. Speaker, last night in Cape Breton, three emergency rooms were closed. Glace Bay, Northside, and New Waterford, leaving only the emergency room open at the Cape Breton Regional Hospital. Yesterday, even before the other ERs were closed, the Cape Breton Regional Hospital already had a full patient load in overflow and another 20 patients needing care. The minister has been saying, don't worry, this situation will be resolved shortly, Mr. Speaker. I'm concerned for the islanders and for anybody visiting the island this weekend, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask, when exactly can residents of Cape Breton and visitors expect to see the issues at the hospitals addressed?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm not sure if that's a question to prepare a number of visitors for this weekend, but it is a very serious issue, and I know that the north side now is in the process with probably the next CEC in the province. That work is in progress. We do have the mobile unit in the New Waterford area. And unfortunately, it is not getting quite the pickup that we need, and people still go to the Cape Breton Regional. This whole area, in terms of its future emergency care services, is in progress and being addressed. But we know that getting physicians now to cover 24/7 is in fact a major problem.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind the Minister that it was his government that delayed the ongoing openings of CECs for over a year, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind also the Minister, this weekend, people in Glace Bay won't have access to the ER at all, Mr. Speaker. It's closed until Monday morning. That means all weekend along, Mr. Speaker, Cape Breton Regional Hospital will see additional patients, and people will have to wait even longer to receive medical attention. How much longer should residents in Cape Breton expect to be impacted by the issues of the emergency room closures, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know there was a delay period while the consultant Mary Jane Hampton was getting a full sense of the CECs as they exist, what we need to design for the future model of care. It is now being considered in conjunction with the whole health services plan for the province. That work has started by the new provincial health authority, and what we can assure all residents of Cape Breton is that the emergency issue is being addressed, and I know that we will have the right model for the future of Cape Breton.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I am due to do a diary post on Lyme disease, so with this question to the Minister of Health, I'll give the Premier a sneak preview. Researchers in Albany, New York, say that the heavy snow that blanketed northeast United States this year was like a cozy quilt for baby black-legged ticks, keeping them insulated. And when the snow in the woods gets too deep, deer often come out of the woods in search of food. And in New York, researchers found that this resulted in infected ticks being found in more urban areas. So my question for the minister is, was the minister aware of the impact the heavy snow can have on the black-legged tick population, and has the department done any similar research to that of New York?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I live in rural Nova Scotia. I live very, very close to the natural world, and have worked to have a good understanding of it. And you're right, the great snowfalls we had this winter have provided a great blanket for nature. And once again, starting with the spring season, we will have monitoring of the black-legged tick and whether or not it is spreading into other areas. The six hotspots in particular are being monitored as we speak.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I also live close to the natural world. Mr. Speaker, I have stood in this House many times, and told the stories of Nova Scotians and them having to travel to the United States for a diagnosis and to spend money on treatment, spend great amounts of money on their own health care. And the Minister has, we've talked about different initiatives that he's undertaken in his department. But we have yet to see a comprehensive strategy to deal with the Lyme disease issue we have in this province. So my question is, does the minister have any plans to complete a provincial Lyme disease strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I went through what would look like, I guess, in one package, a comprehensive Lyme disease strategy. The Department of Health and Wellness, the Department of Natural Resources, and I know labor and workforce development and the work they do with those who labor outside, all of those components are now in the works here in our province. We have had a number of people diagnosed and treated in this province. There is a great deal of professional development with our doctors, and I believe now we have a very strong way of both preventing and diagnosing and treating Lyme disease in our province.
The Honourable Health Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday we learned that the source of the black dust found on surgical equipment was a sign of corrosion of the equipment itself. The minister knew how old the equipment was and that it had reached its life expectancy, but no plans were made to have it replaced in advance of the massive cancellations of surgeries. The minister said that the plans to review the inventory of equipment around the province, he said he's going to plan to do that. But the minister cut the budget for hospital equipment by $12 million from last year's forecast. So why did the minister not initiate an inventory review before the budget was finalized?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As the member for Argyle-Barrington knows, we have a contingency fund in the province for equipment that that does break down, as well as what is planned to be spent each and every year. We were fortunate in the 14-15 budget year to actually purchase some of the equipment that was going to be on the list for this year. So we've actually made an advance in purchasing some equipment. However, in terms of lesson learned here, it is indeed to have a more robust inventory of when equipment is indeed nearing the end of its life cycle.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
In the next 5 to 6 weeks, as we wait for new equipment, thousands of Nova Scotian surgeries will be cancelled. As we wait for the review of the inventory, it will be unclear what other areas of the province could face challenges similar to that experienced at the QE2. But the budget for new equipment is simply not there to respond this year. So my question to the minister will be, what will the minister do if new equipment needs to be purchased and his budget cuts won't allow it?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As I indicated yesterday, no matter what the cost of providing the sterilizers for the QE2 would be, that was not on the table in our discussions.
It was simply working to get the surgeries back up to 100% across the province. Every day this week, an improvement has been made. So that's really now we're into the second part of the plan, and that is to look at the surgeries that were postponed, triage those surgeries, start to move them out to a few of the other capacity areas of regional hospitals. So I feel that we're in a much better place today than where we were on Monday.
Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, taxpayers have put another $2.1 million into the Novastar ferry, and the boat hasn't set sail yet this season. According to a story yesterday in the Portland Press Herald out of Maine, the Maine-based Pratt Abbott Cleaners will provide linen service to the ferry, as it did last year, and I'll table that story, Mr. Speaker. Given that the state of Maine and its taxpayers have not provided any financial support, this is concerning. My question for the Minister is this. Were there no Nova Scotia-based companies who could have provided the linen service for the ferry?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it's an important question from the member across. First of all, our trip to Maine in hopefully mid-June or earlier than that, if possible, is going to explore some of those things with our potential partners in Maine. We really have to get a sense as to where Governor LePage and the entire government and the private sector is from Maine with respect to how they're going to support this endeavour. It's very clear that we're 100% committed to sustainability and long-term survival and growth and prosperity for the Nova Scotia ferry that's going to be there. But just one important point, this is the value in the alternative procurement. We have to look at what the net benefit is for Nova Scotia. Some of these services, as the member identified, Mr. Speaker, we have to know that that money's staying in Nova Scotia. So despite what the Leader of the Opposition said about the RFP, that creates the rigidity that we can't protect Nova Scotia investment, and this will allow us to do just that.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer and say, yes, we are concerned about small businesses in Nova Scotia being able to participate in the economy of the ferry. In that same story, the owner of Two Fat Cats Bakery in Portland has says they have exchanged emails with the company about once again supplying pastries and cookies for the ferries. Although there's no formal deal in place, she says the early contacts have been encouraging. First, the linen contract, now possibly the pastries. My question for the Minister is this. Can he explain to the House the vendor procurement process for the Novastar and exactly how Nova Scotia companies can bid on these contracts?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My understanding with respect to the current operation is that these are business decisions that were made through Novastar and their operations to reduce the cost to the extent possible. That's where we're at present day. Our conversation with Mark Edmondson about this very topic is that we have to see that investment and the money that we've put in as a province, as taxpayers, to make sure this service is there for the long term. We have to know that money's staying in Nova Scotia and being part of the Nova Scotia economy. But again, Mr. Speaker, there are indications that Maine is interested. They want to be a partner. They want to share in the success of the Nova Scotia to Maine ferry service. So we're looking forward to those conversations. But we do want to make sure that we protect the taxpayers, the people, and the economy of this province. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A recent report published by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives titled A Generation of Broken Promises, the 2014 report card on child and family poverty in Nova Scotia, outlines a disturbing trend of child poverty in Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, our beautiful island of Cape Breton also has the second highest rate of child poverty in Canada. One in three children live in poverty in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker, and I will table that report. Mr. Speaker, can the Minister of Community Services please explain why the shocking rates of childhood poverty in Cape Breton are not directly addressed in this budget?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you for the question. As someone who's worked in the community for years, Looking at the root causes of poverty is really what's going to lift people out of poverty. And so I was really pleased over the last couple of years to see the investments that were made to organizations that support families in crisis. I know that there's a child poverty problem in Cape Breton. It didn't start on October 8th, 2013. It's been going on for many decades. I'm pleased with the It's a sad fact. Yeah, it is. It is. It is. Sorry, yeah. I'm encouraged by the investments that we've made in different organizations that actually help families in crisis, including transition houses, family resource centers. I'm also, in the coming weeks, will be looking at children's outreach, which will, a few of them will be centered in Cape Breton as well to help with families who are in crisis in that area.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do thank the Minister for her response, and I'm sure she does care what's going on in Cape Breton, as we do on this side of the House. Mr. Speaker, the McNeill government froze income assistance for the second year in a row, as we know, and this means that many Cape Breton families with children have to stretch their budgets even further to pay for basic necessities like food, shelter, and utilities. So, can the minister please explain how freezing income assistance rates for the second year in a row is actually helping address the issue of child poverty in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I again thank you for the question. I truly believe if somebody who's been in this situation and somebody who's worked in the community that incrementally raising child social assistance rates each month or each year doesn't address the root causes of poverty. Your government raised the rates, but there's still poverty in Cape Breton. It really has to look at the strategic investments of helping people move out of the situation in the condition of poverty. And that's what we're doing in the department. And we're also looking at benefit reform that really looks deeper into the situation of poverty so that we don't perpetuate a cyclical and generational effect of poverty in this province. It hasn't been done in many decades. And I look forward to the results of that reform.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Education. On Wednesday, Mr. Speaker, all members of the House were troubled to hear that an 18-year-old student was stabbed on school property at Millwood High School in Middlesackville. The Minister's action plan states that we need to ensure that we can create the kinds of caring, respectful, and safe schools that students, parents, and teachers deserve. My question to the Minister: is the department currently engaging with school boards to examine any new ways to improve school safety for students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. And I, too, was troubled when I heard of a tragic incident on one of our school property. I do want to commend the administration and the staff and the adults in the school who took the appropriate action. They took the appropriate action not only to care for the young man who was injured, but also to contact the police to ensure that they were alerted. And I do understand that as a result of that quick action, that a suspect has been apprehended.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we all appreciate the swift response of law enforcement officials in cases like this. Partnerships between law enforcement and school boards through school liaison programs have proved to be a big benefit for students, schools, and communities. My question to the Minister, is there any dedicated funding from the Department of Education set aside for school liaison programs, and is the department actively involved in promoting and expanding these partnerships between law enforcement and schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. Partnerships are necessary, more so perhaps than ever, in our schools when we have issues that are brought to the school that play themselves out there. And I know that in many municipalities there is a partnership between the municipality and the school to ensure that there is law enforcement services available to the school, in particular our large high schools.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, in a letter to the Premier, the Tourism Industry Association of Nova Scotia expressed its disappointment that it was not approached far in advance of the government's announcement that it was creating the Tourism Nova Scotia, a Crown Corporation. They only found out about this, and I will table that letter. They only found out about this plan a day in advance of when asked for a news release comment. This is concerning, as it suggests another example of the government acting before doing its homework beforehand. My question for the minister is this. Can the minister explain why she did not share the government's plans with the association and ask for feedback in advance of the announcement?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I was just wondering about who is the appropriate minister to answer that question. I know that the industry itself has been asking for this greater autonomy and the chance to have control over, you know, how monies are spent and how we promote our province. So I'm, if you want a second question on that, I would suggest you go to the Department of Business. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer, and yes, I do want to redirect to the Department of Business. Mr. Speaker, while the board of this new agency will be made up of industry members, the government should ensure that TIANS is consulted going forward. The association represents the members across the province, has knowledge and experience that should be drawn upon. My question for the Minister of Business is, as the Minister moves forward, will he ensure that TIANS is appropriately consulted so that we can build a stronger tourism industry here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This past week, I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Squires, who chairs the TIANS board and represents the industry. And four of the TIANS members actually sit on the tourism board. So there's a tremendous link between TIANS and the new Tourism Crown Corporation. I can assure the member that going forward, there will be exceptional cooperation and consultation between both agencies to ensure that we meet and achieve the objectives laid out in the Ivany Report.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of TIR. Yesterday, in question period, the Minister indicated his deputy would be attending a public meeting on the future of Cape Breton Rail Line. The Minister said, and I quote, "Any information they need will be provided. We will give them every shred of data, information, and direction." The minister also said, "This is not about a long-term subsidy," end quote. If not a long-term subsidy, Mr. Speaker, will a minister's deputy be providing information at today's meeting in Sydney about a short-term subsidy available to save the rail line?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I mentioned yesterday, the meeting today is with a group formulated by Dr. David Ray from CBU that's looking at some of the community involvement and how a community operation could play a role with the rail line, Mr. Speaker. The Minister's Rail Advisory Committee has looked at a number of very important pieces of this over the last year. As the member knows opposite, that we've brought in very important legislation that gave us not only some time to explore options, but of course protection from environmental liabilities, from financial liabilities, Mr. Speaker. So we've done some good work on this one. It's certainly not over yet, but we're committed to understanding what the business model is, what's the best way to keep the rails on the ground and make sure that they're contributing to the Cape Breton economy, specifically as it relates to the Port of Sydney.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Queen Shelburne.
Mr. Speaker, the rail line has been the lifeline of business in Cape Breton that relies on this line to ship their products. This line was built with public money, and now Cape Bretoners are concerned about losing this line. This is about the future of Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker. How much of a subsidy is the minister willing to offer the rail line as people in Cape Breton build their business case to keep this vital transportation link?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
First of all, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to welcome the member to the party. We've been talking about the Cape Breton rail line for quite some time, so it's great to be finally interested. And secondly, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to also remind the member it's a very dangerous path to play politics with this one. It's a very sensitive issue in Cape Breton. We're doing our very best. We've put together an advisory committee that's exploring all options for this rail line, Mr. Speaker. So don't bring it to the House, the floor of the House now. We've been working on this. We've been working very hard. We're putting together a plan. We're talking about the private sector and involvement. That's
Order,
right. So
please.
Listen, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member, order. Order, please. The Honourable Member for Kings North. Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Business. Yesterday, in conversations I had with Mr. Glenn Squires of Tourism of Tyans, he expressed his frustration that the Tyans members who represent Tyans on the board of Tourism Nova Scotia have been told that they are everything that the board does is confidential and that they are not to bring that information back to Tyans. My question for the minister is, why has that been communicated to those representatives of Tyans on the board of Tourism Nova Scotia? And surely they're able to communicate back to Tourism Nova, to Tyans, the information on the board.
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't speak for the discussions that take place within the Tourism Board. They're certainly independent of government. But what I said in my response to the previous question, I will ensure that there's strong dialogue and communication between Tyans and the board. We'll take steps to ensure that those discussions continue. I had a tremendous meeting with Mr. Squires earlier this week. I actually met with the Board of Tourism Nova Scotia. And I believe with the representation on the board, we have an opportunity to move the tourism industry forward. I have the full confidence in the board. I have the full confidence in Mr. Squires and the membership in Tyans.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Business houses the Office of Regulatory and Service Effectiveness, and the government has said the office will work to implement regulatory recommendations in the Broughton Report. My question for the minister is this. Will the office review the regulations that were not included in the scope of the Broughton Report, or will it be limited to the recommendations from the Broughton Report?
The Honourable Minister of Business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. The primary objective of the regulatory group is to implement the recommendations of the tax and regulatory review. But, Mr. Speaker, if we're genuine about moving the opportunities of Nova Scotia forward, obviously the regulatory body will review across government, across departments, any and all regulations that we can address that will enhance small business and medium or large business in the province of Nova Scotia. The objective, Mr. Speaker, is to eliminate redundant regulations and enhance business opportunities in the province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for the Minister of Education, and I can promise you that it won't be about rail lines. Mr. Speaker, after a strange odour was detected by students and staff at the Meadowfields Community School in Yarmouth, it was discovered that this was caused by wet insulation and rodent droppings in the walls of the school. Because Meadowfields is a P3 school, the owner has contracted an air quality consultant to contact tests to ensure the students and staff are not at risk. The board has indicated that the results will be posted on its website. My question to the minister: what discussions has the minister had with the school board and school owner, and will the department receive those air quality tests?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. And yes, it certainly is in the public domain that there was an odour in the Meadowfield School. It is a P3 school, and as part of our lease agreements, the P3 owner is responsible for responding to concerns and issues and doing the follow-up at their cost for any remediation that needs to take place. They are working very closely with the staff in the Tri-County School Board, and also are keeping our department closely informed on what next steps are taking place.
Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I understand that after the odour was detected, classes continued in the affected area for a week before students were moved. The board superintendent has said that some staff had complained of headaches and dry eyes. I know the safety of students and teachers is a priority for all members of this House. My question to the Minister, as many of our P3 schools begin to age, what oversight and standards do boards in the Department of Education have to ensure that issues like this are investigated and corrected as quickly as possible to ensure the safety of students and teachers?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. You know, the safety of all of our students, regardless of whether they're in a P3 or whether they're in one of our publicly owned schools, is a priority. We work very closely with the P3 operators, and we do have, as I said, in the lease agreement, a commitment from the partner that they will maintain the buildings to a standard that is acceptable to the boards.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Transportation. Highway safety studies were released earlier this week, and I know it is early days, but I wonder if the Minister can share any information with this House about what work may be done this summer on Highway 104 to try and make it a little bit more safer.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For the member opposite, we're looking specifically immediately at some of the measures that we can put in place within our TIR game plan now, rumble strips, some brush cutting, looking at signage and some of the speed indicators. Also, Mr. Speaker, though, broader than that, even from a short-term level, we're looking at some of the specific options coming from the safety review and how we can put them in place this summer, again, within our maintenance envelope. So we're working on those as well. But, Mr. Speaker, I do want to mention for the member opposite how thankful we are to have a leader like Joe McDonald in the province who's done tremendous work on advocating for twinning and the importance of road safety in this province. Joe's a great guy. I know he's a friend of the member opposite, and we appreciate his work, and we know that the 104 is important for Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
I thank the Minister for that answer, and I do think that even rumble strips are an excellent addition to improve the safety of the highway. And I thank him for acknowledging the work of Joe McDonald. He's certainly a great advocate for that area and an all-around good person. So I do also look forward to the Minister's community consultations about exploring the possibility of toll roads. So I wonder if in the last 15 seconds the Minister could shed any light on a possible timeline for those consultations to begin.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just, the highway system's important to us. And
order, please. Time allowed for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. Just before we move on to government business, we have a couple of introductions. The Honourable Member for... The Honourable Member for Cumberland South and the Leader of the Official Opposition, on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With your permission, I would like to introduce a Cape Bretoner in the West Gallery today. Mr. Speaker, joining us is a great Cape Bretoner and the President of the Cape Breton Business College, a strong advocate for his area, and that is Brian MacArthur and his wife, Leslie. I'd like them to rise and receive the welcome here of the House of Assembly.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I rise on a point of order. Earlier today in question period, the Minister from